Hello and welcome, welcome, welcome to the 51st episode of the PEM podcast. We've been away for 2 weeks on a hiatus that neither one of us enjoyed because we've been so busy. So busy. I'm bringing you books. Sandy is doing her amazing marketing thing. Life got kind of in the way. And then it was Easter, and we were like, we don't really want to record on Easter. So here we are. Finally, we're back. We've had an influx of fan comments recently. Thank you all. Well, you don't read them unless I'm like, you got to read this one. Thank you all for
I do read
commenting.
them.
Yeah, for commenting and getting involved and staying involved and honestly following us, podcast to podcast. I think we're both really surprised when people confess that they like the podcast. I mean, this was kind of, we didn't start it with any intention really to do it very long, honestly. And then I don't know that I did. I thought, we'll do it for a little while and then we'll get tired of it. And you've been just
I never heard that, so obviously I'm the idiot in
you
this
missed the
mix.
memo. You missed the memo.
I missed them.
Yeah.
I did not get
Oops.
the memo. This was a short-term project.
That's okay. That's okay. It's turned into a long-term project and something that we both really enjoy. It's just sometimes it's hard to cram in with both of our very busy schedules. So we'll just continue to do our best. That's all we can do. Okay. So anecdote. I have a great. I've had a couple weeks, a couple weeks of readings and saving up anecdotes. So I've got a couple. This one is one of my favorite that I've had in a long time. So I have a client that I've been reading actually for years, comes to me at least once a year. Sometimes twice, but at least once a year. And he's just a love. He's just such a great guy. He's from New York. Thick New York accent, which I always love. I knew that his mother-in-law had been ill for years, and not, it wasn't a good ill. It was like a really slow crawl decline, and she really just wanted to go. And everybody was very supportive of keeping her comfortable for as long as possible. So I connect with him, and immediately his mother-in-law goes right at the front of my head. And she is so excited to connect and tell everybody that not only did she make it across, but she feels marvelous. She just was like, I feel so wonderful. And because she'd spent years bedridden, and this was a very active woman until she got very, very ill, because she'd spent years bedridden, she was just so effusive with energy. There was just, bounds of energy. And she was really, really happy. She'd reconnected with a sister and her father, who she adored, and her husband. So it was all, it was lovely kind of reunion sort of energy. And then she literally said to me, she's like, I'm just so glad to get out of New York. Like, she used to love to travel and she couldn't go anywhere because she was so ill for so long. And she was just so relieved to make it out of New York. So
New
then
York heaven. Which one do you want to
I
pick?
know, right? Like, yes, I'm sure there's a New York in heaven, right? Some people's version of heaven might be Manhattan. I don't know. I don't know. I guess we'll find out when we get there. But she was just like, like now I'm free to go explore the rest of the universe, kind of thing. So then his father came in and was giving me all sorts of really, really great identifiers that it was really him. And then he showed me Mr. Green Jeans. And I'm like, it's one of those occasions again where I'm like, don't make me say that. That's, I don't want to say that. I'm gonna look weird, right? And he just kept flashing like Mr. Green Jeans. So I go, who's the gardener? And I know that he lives in the middle of New York City. There's no gardening and for him or his family. And he's like, well, sometimes my sister, likes to put out like a flower pot. And I'm like, fuck, what does this mean, right? So I finally said, okay, he's showing me Mr. Green Jeans. And he goes, oh my God, that's my favorite smoothie. He goes, I have it every day. I had it today. And I'm like, there's a smoothie named Mr. Green Jeans, and it's actually kind of a little bit of a famous smoothie in New York. There's a juice company that produces smoothie called Mr. Green Jeans. And my client gets one pretty much every single day. It's his favorite. So it was just his dad's way of saying, see, I see you, and I see you doing even the small things, which I thought was just, you know, it was like.
I suggest that if someone starts showing you Charmin toilet paper, just ignore, like pass.
Toilet paper? Why?
Well, if they're with you in the little moments, then and they're showing you Charmin toilet paper, that means they're watching you in the bathroom.
Okay. Oh yeah. No, there's no bathroom humor over on the other side. So that's why it was lost on me. No, they wouldn't look at you in your private moments. So you were free to have all of your private moments to yourself without an audience. Okay. Mama's not watching you and your husband go at it. Okay. So rest assured, there is definitely a privacy wall. Because why would they do that? You know, like that would be, I don't know, creepy and weird. So I'm like, toilet paper, why? Are they using it to wrap a tree around? Like, what does that mean? Usually we're on the same page and we get each other, but my God, that's, I don't know. There was a disconnect there, Sans. Not to say that it wasn't funny, but over my head. Anyway, so that's my anecdote. You'll have to wait for episode 52 for the next anecdote, which was lovely. It was great. Anyway, okay, so book promotion. No ghouls allowed. So in this installment of the next MJ Holiday Gillespie Ghost Hunter Mysteries, MJ returns to her home in Georgia. She has a very difficult relationship with her father. Mostly she just ignores her father, doesn't really talk to him, but she's been invited home because he's getting married. So MJ's father took her mother's death very, very hard. When MJ was, I think, 6 or 7, her mother passed away and devastated MJ, and it turned her father into an alcoholic. And so they really just became strangers under the same roof. So MJ returns home at her father's invitation for the wedding. And this is the first woman that he's ever, since her mother died, been in any kind of romantic relationship with. And I mean, MJ doesn't quite know what to think about it. She returns home. She discovers that this woman is absolutely lovely. And she also owns a haunted house. So MJ goes to the house to see if she can solve the problem of the poltergeist that is driving away construction crews who are trying to renovate the property. And this is the one where my sister famously is like, called me up and said, are you okay? And I'm like, why wouldn't I be okay? I'm fine. She's like, you nailed a man to a wall with a nail gun. And I'm like, well, he was dead at the time. He was already dead. He didn't feel a thing. So, yeah. So this one has, I always wanted to do a zombie scene. And so this one has a bit of a zombie scene. Yeah, I just threw everything, the kitchen sink in. So it's a good page turner, and it is very scary. So if you like that kind of quick paced nail biter, edge of your seat, that's the one for you. But just know that the guy who was nailed to the wall was already dead when the nail gun went off. Didn't experience any pain from the nail gun. Not going to say he didn't experience a little pain before, but when the nail gun came out, he was already dead. So yeah. Are you okay? Oh, it was so funny. Anyway, so that's anecdote book promotion. This is an unusual case that we're going to present to you today because it's been solved in the past like week and a half, 2 weeks. So Sandy wrote this up at the beginning of March. I think her intuitive mind was going like, we should do this right away. And then life got in the way and we didn't record it when we said we were going to record it, which would have been a week before it was solved. And it would have been so great, but we can still bring you the details. And I can give you kind of, before I learned that it was solved, I can give you what my impressions were. So Sans, take it away.
Okay. So this case comes by way of courtesy, recommended by a fan, Jen Richmond. who alerted me to the mystery itself. She's from Pennsylvania, and this case took place in Old Forge, Pennsylvania. It's about a restaurant owner named Robert Barron, who disappeared on January 25th, 2017. So up until that date, which was a Wednesday evening, Gigarelli's was a bustling pizza restaurant on Main Street in the heart of Old Forge, Pennsylvania. And it was a fixture for decades because it was a family-owned restaurant that was locally known as the pizza capital of the world. But sometime after 10 p.m. that night, the eatery's owner, 58-year-old Robert Barron, disappeared, and the restaurant doors have remained closed since that fateful evening. Maria Barron, Robert's wife, says that she and her family have been living a real-life nightmare for the past 6 years, and as a result, she and Robert's loved ones have begun to speak out, demanding answers from the police and insisting that they won't rest until justice is served. Robert's family bought Gigarelli's in 1961, and Robert, who grew up in Old Forge, eventually took over the business, and from that moment on, he poured his heart and soul into the restaurant. It wasn't unusual for Robert to spend the night in the apartment above the restaurant after closing, so he could meet the pizza dough delivery person at 7 a.m. sharp when the dough order was delivered for the day. Even though January 25th was a particularly busy day at the restaurant, Robert still made time to talk with his two daughters, Brittany and Nicole, whom, along with their brother Bobby, all grew up as part of the family business. Brittany, who was attending LaSalle University in Philadelphia, talked to her dad on the phone earlier in the day, and Robert shared that he was looking to buy a new car in Philadelphia. They talked until his phone died and then continued their conversation later that night by text until about 10 p.m. Robert's other daughter, Nicole, who lived in New York City, also talked with her dad during the day, and among other things, they discussed her plans to buy a vacuum cleaner later that day. Between 10 and 11 p.m., after a long day at the restaurant, Robert drove his 30-year-old son, Bobby, who was also a partner in the business, to his apartment. Bobby did not realize as he bid his dad goodnight that he would be the last known person to see Robert alive. The next morning, when Robert was abnormally late to pick Bobby up for work, Bobby texted his dad at 7:40 a.m. to let him know that he was ready to go, but he didn't get a response. Bobby then contacted his mom, Maria, but she told him that Robert had not come home the night before, so she assumed he had slept at their restaurant apartment. Now concerned, Bobby walked to Gigarelli's, and upon arrival, he discovered the pizza dough delivery sitting outside, unattended and on the sidewalk, which was highly unusual. After checking the apartment, which he found empty, Bobby walked into the restaurant and discovered what looked like the scene of a violent assault. Now panicked, Bobby contacted the police. Investigators found a significant amount of blood at the scene and a human tooth in a utility sink. DNA tests later revealed that both the blood and the tooth belonged to Robert. His cell phone was discovered in the restaurant kitchen on top of the dishwasher, and his car, a 2006 silver Hyundai Elantra, was missing. The vehicle was recovered 2 days later, abandoned on Howard Street about a mile from the restaurant with muddy tires. Investigators determined that the bloodstains found inside the car, signifying a large amount of blood loss, also belonged to Robert. A restaurant employee told investigators that on January 25th, Robert had received multiple calls on the business landline, after which Robert told the employee, "Don't answer the phone anymore." Restaurant security camera footage captured two men walking on South Main Street in Old Forge shortly after midnight on January 26, 2017. One of the men, who was in the shadows, appeared to be pulling a suitcase, which the family claims is missing from the restaurant apartment. In addition, Maria Barron told investigators after checking the apartment, she realized that the comforter was missing from the bed. The extent of the investigators' findings surrounding Robert's disappearance, that's the extent of the investigators' findings surrounding Robert's disappearance. The Barrons theorized that Robert was the victim of a botched robbery and likely involved someone or several people that knew Robert and his routine. His daughter Brittany has stated in an interview with Dateline NBC that she believes her dad walked in on someone trying to rob the restaurant and her dad fought back, which likely cost him his life. Resigned to the notion that they will likely never see Robert alive again, the family still wants answers about what happened to their beloved. The Barron family is frustrated with how the investigation is going or not going and believe if police hadn't botched the investigation, Robert would have been found long ago. After 6 long years, the family wants and deserves closure. The chief of police has stated that missing person cases are very rare for the department and that the Pennsylvania State Police are assisting with the investigation. According to the Lackawanna County District Attorney's Office, the investigation into Robert's disappearance is ongoing and authorities continue to work with federal, state, and local investigators to solve this crime. Robert is a low-key family man and described as 5'9", approximately 185 pounds, with brown hair. He was last seen wearing a black North Face jacket, blue or black sweatpants and a dark t-shirt and a Penn State hoodie. The family has offered a $30,000 reward for information. And then the week of 3/28/2023, it was reported in the news that the search suddenly resumed to look for Robert in Old Forge. And they were looking, investigators were digging up behind Pagnotti's softball field, which is a wooded area. And then on the second day, they were searching Connell's patch section, which is where there were a dozen law enforcement officers and multiple agencies converging on that location. So they were looking in two distinct areas, an athletic field and then an area behind a coal company. And that's the extent of what I was able to discover. And then Victoria shared with me that they, in fact, have solved the crime. So while there aren't a lot of details that have been revealed, I know intuitively you have some insights that you thought could be useful for our listening audience.
So the remains were found probably shortly after they started to search that area. And they were sent to the coroner. The coroner believes that he died of blunt force trauma, but the remains have been exposed to the elements for 6 years. So they had to send it off to an expert, I guess in anthropology, something, archaeology, something, a bone guy, to sort of determine if that was the cause of death. I kind of feel it was. Everything in the, at the scene of the crime kind of points to that anyway. And then arrested was Justin Schuback, 37, who was actually friends with Robert's son, Bobby. So I think that Bobby was not involved. I really don't think he was involved. I think that Justin knew when Robert was going to drive his son home, thought he had a window, thought he could go in and rob the place and leave. I feel like Justin Schuback had a drug problem. And he was trying to fuel the drug problem. I feel like Robert walked in, recognized Justin panicked, and clobbered him with something heavy. I think Robert fought back to the best of his ability, but I think Justin was fueled by adrenaline and panic, and Robert was really only 5'9", so he wasn't very tall. So I have a feeling that a kind of a battle ensued, but I think that the first blow to Robert's head was enough to kind of take him down, and not really allow a lot of room for fighting back. I think Justin, I don't think he acted with anybody else. I'm not getting that impression that he acted with anybody else. He could have, but I didn't get that impression. And before I knew that the crime had been solved, I was reading the write-ups and I was like, there's something hinky with the drive home with the son. And I'm like, I don't know if the son's involved though, because it didn't have that kind of, malevolent sort of undertone. So the reason that it felt a little hinky was because it was Bobby's friend. So, thank goodness the family now has closure. Terrible, sad tragedy. This man was beloved.
Do you have any idea how it is that investigators got tipped off to the location of Robert's body?
I have a feeling it was like a process of elimination. So they had to, the problem with the restaurant is that you have so many fingerprints, right? Yeah. There are fingerprints everywhere. Yeah. And so if it was someone who had left fingerprints in the restaurant, then it had to have been someone that was familiar with the restaurant, right? So I have a feeling that they just sort of systematically went through known associates of the family, identified this guy as having a drug issue, a drug problem, and then kind of honed in on him. And probably through a process of elimination, might have found fingerprints in the area where the money was kept. And, normally a friend of Bobby's would be in and out talking, putting his fingerprints on everything. So I think that it was sort of a process of elimination. And I kind of also suspect that he might have confessed to someone, because I have a feeling his conscience was really bothering him. And I think he might have confessed to a friend or something that he had something to do with it or knew something. And so I feel that they just really worked the case diligently until they were like, it's this guy. Yeah. This guy did it in the dining room with the candlestick. So that's kind of how I feel. It sort of came down. So good that the family can now finally grieve without wondering, you know, is it okay to grieve? Could he still be alive? You know?
Yeah.
That limbo land, I can't imagine anything more torturous than that limbo land. That just must be awful. So,
I think that's
a lot of these cases is, you know, until the remains are found. A lot of these cases that we do, these poor families are just sort of living in limbo.
Yeah.
Some of them will live in limbo for the rest of their lives, you know,
yeah,
because there's just no body to be found. So,
well, oftentimes I'll ask you at the end of a case, you know, do you think it'll be solved? And you mm-hmm. either indicate you do believe it will or it won't. So this was mm-hmm. one that, thankfully it has been solved. I'm sad to know that Gigarelli's, the restaurant that had been in business since the Barons bought it in 1961, the doors have remained closed. The family is not planning on reopening it, and it's kind of drawn traffic away from the downtown area as a result. Mm-hmm. So
that's too bad.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
But you could understand too, that like he was so much a part of that restaurant that going in would just be heartbreaking.
I agree. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And then, and how do you sell it if you don't know if he's dead or not? Do you know?
Yeah.
So just really heartbreaking, just heartbreaking. Sad. But at least now they know, which is
yes.
good.
Yes, for sure.
Good job picking up a case that, you know, I would have been, I think this is going to be solved.
Yeah. And it has.
And it's case solved. So,
yes.
Yep. So that's it. It was a little on the quick side, but at least we brought the PEM podcast back to you. So all's good. All's good. Okay. So we'll see you for episode 52. If you like our podcast, go ahead and hit the like button. Subscribe to our channel if you feel inclined. If you want to know more about me or how to book an appointment with me, please go to victorialaurie.com. And that's all I got. You got anything else?
Nope.
No, we're good to go. All right. Love you. Mean it.
Love you too. Thank you, everyone.
See you later.